How do you live your life like tomorrow matters? Perhaps you're already growing food, consuming less, connecting with your community. Perhaps you're already thinking hard, keen to see the world a little slower, greener, healthier. But where to begin? Here on the Future Setting Podcast, we dig deep into the hearts and minds of blissfully normal people doing bloody amazing things, unearthing their moments of contradiction, their hopes and fears for the future, and what galvanises them to action, in the name of inspiring all of us to do a little more in shaping a better future today. I'm Jade, and this is Future Setting. Right now, just like you, I'm sure, I'm up to my eyeballs with summer garden wrap-up jobs that are smacking straight into the winter garden setup jobs all at the same time. It's hard not to feel like a six-year-old at the starting line waiting for that dreaded bang to go off. Do you remember that? I can still recall the lack of confidence in my own legs to actually start running on command rather than collapsing. The most pressing thing that I need to do right now is the planting of our garlic crop, because if I miss the window of warmth, the bulbs will simply sit and rot in the cold, wet Stanley soil. So time really is somewhat critical. Or is it? Now, I say this because last week at our rewilding workshop with the gorgeous Eva and Will from Wild Beings Australia, we were talking with our group about the fact that rarely is there just one way to do things. In fact, when care, intellect, and heart goes into the building of skills, into earth care, and into people care, there are just so many right ways of doing things. And so, with that in mind, rather than getting my knickers all knotted about the rules that I've set myself, these arbitrary rules, about the right way of doing things and to do it the way I've always done it, I'm going to take a deep breath and I'm going to ask around and learn some other ways to extend my season in these chilly hills. And then perhaps, just like today's guest, I'll see exactly what she means when she says, humans want to connect. And food, gardening, and land management is neutral ground when approached with an open heart, open mind, and curiosity. She says, rarely is there ever just one way of doing something. Now, before I hand you over to Hannah Maloney, I got to say that the recording quality of this isn't flash. Remember that these were conversations I was having to write my book. And so I've been a bit opportunistic, but I really want to share them with you because they're fun and they've got a joy that I think is worth sharing. So turn the sound up and enjoy a quiet cuppa while you listen to this convo, which was recorded late last year, just as Hannah released her second book, Good Life Growing, How to Grow Fruit and Veg in Any Climate in Australia. I also want to thank so many of you for heeding the call for support over the last two episodes. In particular, I want to thank Linda Barrett, Jody Hughes, Chris Penny, and Jackie, who have all shown support for the Future Setting community by jumping in and buying cuppas in the last week, and also to Louise Fresca, who's become our latest Patreon supporter. The link for both of these really simple options is in the show notes. Righto, enough from me. Enjoy the warmth of this convo with the pink-haired one. So today, for a trifecta conversation with an absolute legend, we have the good life girl, Hannah Maloney. Since we chatted last, this pink-haired, long-legged, broad-smiled human released her first book, The Good Life, became the Tasmanian presenter on the ABC's Gardening Australia, and today, she tells me, she's written and today releases her second book, Good Life Growing, giving all of us some hope in the food growing department. Beginning her life as a hardened frontline activist, Hannah soon decided there were multiple ways to mitigate climate change and live your values without impacting your nervous system, and she steered her energies into permaculture design and education. Last time we caught up, we talked about the role of hope and the power of living with love rather than fear. Her trademark open and uncomplicated manner belies her depth of systems understanding, but her humility has her continuing to engage with anyone wishing to traverse towards this slower, more connected way of being. It's so lovely to have you here for the third time. Hello.
Hello, Jade. Thanks for having me back.
I know. I love having you on the show, and so does everybody else. So aww, you sit up there in our kind of top two or three. So, you're so humble. I just love it. Now, but before we pressed record, you were talking about the fact that you are at the moment juggling a whole lot of different hats. You're a mum, which is why we're going to wrap this up in 55 minutes. Watch us go. And have school pickup to do. You are also nursing Anton at home at the moment because he jumped on a skateboard in all his wisdom and wore all the safety gear, but your hips aren't protected from that, so he broke his hip and you're now
Poor darling Anton. So he, in his heyday, he was a pretty amazing skater, and then he stopped it sensibly. Many years ago, he's like, I don't want to hurt myself. And then maybe 6 months ago, he's like, I'm just going to do some gentle skating because it makes me so happy. But even gentle skating can be a bit hard on your body, it turns out. So he's currently a bit bedridden for 5 or 6 more weeks.
And the timing sucks because you're about to hit the road.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So I think for the next 5 weekends, I'm away every weekend, plus some of the middle of the weeks as well. So I think this is a prime example where the model of a nuclear family is completely unrealistic. It's ridiculous. Mm. So there's only 3 of us here. One of us is 8 years old, can't expect much of her. And so we are pulling in our friends and some of our family. Every weekend I'm away, someone's staying here so they can just help things function and also keep morale high. And we've got friends dropping off dinners twice a week, even when I am here, because it's just not great or not healthy to try to do everything yourself. And we're not meant to do that as humans. And we often end up doing more than, like, I'm still doing more than one human should, but just taking the edge off with our community infrastructure, if you like, that surrounds us. And people love helping. Like, as soon as I ask, they're like, oh, yeah, I'll cook you 2 meals, not one. I'll make you 2.
Interesting that you say that. People genuinely do love helping, don't they?
Love helping, love it. And often it's harder to ask. I only ask of my community things like this when I really need it. And but, you know, I think people love to be called on. And it's often how we show our love and care for each other. It's like, oh, yeah, I really love this person. I want to do anything I can for them. And so there's beauty amongst the hardship always, I guess.
Always. Always. And I think the other thing that's interesting is that you aren't born and bred Hobartians. You've not been in Tassie all your life. You guys have intentionally created a new life down there and built a community from scratch, really. And I know that it's aided by things like having kiddos that are at a school and that kind of gives you an immediate community. But it can be really hard to especially with a new community, to say, listen, we're in a bit of a bind. Any chance of a hand?
Yeah, definitely. I have travelled. I've lived all over Australia. I grew up in Meanjin, Brisbane, and now based in Nipaluna, Hobart. And I think I've noticed as I got older, I've been here for like 11 years now, so I've been pretty settled. But just even towards the end of my travels, it got harder and harder to build community because people are kind of locked into their beautiful bubbles of where they go to school or who they catch up with on the weekends. And that's, you know, that's nothing wrong with that at all. As we get older, it can be a bit more time-consuming, if you like. It takes longer to build those longer relationships, those deeper relationships. And so I'm mindful that when I have people come into our community from the other parts of Australia, I'm like extra friendly to them. I'm like, hello. Because I really...
Your extra friendly might be overwhelming because you are friendly to anyone and everyone.
No, the best But I get it. It's a lot of effort. Some of us find it easier. Some of us find it harder if you're introvert, extrovert, et cetera. I think it is well worth the time making that happen because the community is what holds us through good and not so good times.
Totally. How have you done it? What is the secret to building these huddles and communities?
Yeah, I think for me, when we came back to Tasmania, I had some pre-existing friendships here. So like went from when I was like early 20s when we all shared housing together. But a lot of people move away from Tassie and that's fine. And so I think for me it was very much around finding common people in the common interests. And a lot of that happens to come from my work. And people say, oh, that's not healthy, but my work is my everything. Like I love what I do. And so that I hang out with a lot of growers and farmers. And then with having a child, more and more young families found our way into our circles, which is delightful. And so I think it's through common interests, through our lovely daughter Frida, and I think every now and then, it doesn't happen very often, you meet somebody just randomly, and you're like, oh, you're awesome.
You're my
like,
person.
Like you're my person. Let's hang out tomorrow. Okay, and I've just got a couple of those people I've met in the last decade, and it's really nice. Like you don't need many close friends, or I don't.
No.
Like I just need a handful of people I can call or drop in on, and it's just the most beautiful, easiest thing, and you can cut straight to the chase. And I got with one friend, and like we'll catch up, and she's like, "I just need to tell you about this thing." I'm like, "Cool, can I? Is it my turn to talk now? I need to tell you about something else." And it was like, "Bounce, bounce, bounce, bounce."
Okay, now I'm holding the talking stick. Stop talking.
There's no pleasantries, but it's so much love and care there. Like, yep, it's totally your turn. Okay, go.
Actually, I think I totally dominated last time. This time, I'll just thank me. It's quite lovely, isn't it? I've just employed someone with my off-farm work, and I met her at a conference, and someone else had said to me, just kind of keep your eye on her. I think she might be your person. And within about 30 seconds of seeing her, I didn't really know what she looked like, but as I saw her walking down the ramp into this conference, I thought, you've got to be her. There's no doubt you're her. She's the most divine human. Anyway, she called in on her way through to another sort of gathering with her partner last week, and I don't even know her. And it was honestly like we have been friends forever. We had a naked swim in a dam. We put our hands in the dirt and planted some trees. You are my person. Yeah.
So nice. I'm very happy for you.
It's such a special and it's such a rare thing. It doesn't happen very often, does it?
No. I think that's like, you've got to remember that. Like you go, wow, when you find them, it's like, oh, you've just got to hold on. Great.
You talked a minute ago about your work, and your work is now vast and varied because you wear a lot of different hats, and people would know you off ABC Organic Gardener. They would know you as an author who then is, you know, spreading the good word and having beautiful community conversations at all of these different events that you get invited to. But one of the things that you, and it's sort of your mainstay, is your permaculture design business. And I just want to talk about how you build people care into the people care principle into the designs that you're creating for people?
Oh, it's a brilliant question. I think often people come to me, go, oh, but it's property, can you design it? And like, sounds lovely. But we spend the first chunk of our time together talking about people and who, you know, who's living in that place or who's working there, who's coming through there, how do you want to be in that space, and basically human behavior and human nature. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of centered around people care. It's like, well, what do you need? But also what is your capacity and everything related to those things. And I think it's, I don't want to say easy, but it's perhaps more straightforward when you design a landscape with no people involvement.
Yes.
And as soon as you put people into that mix, it's like, whoa, the complexities get really varied and deep.
Yeah.
And I think it can be tricky, absolutely, but there's a wonderful opportunity to have that conversation around people care, which is intrinsically linked with land care as well. And so it's very much part of the core foundation for, I think, good, sensible permaculture design. It has to be based on who are the people living, working, interacting with that landscape. And from there, anything that happens with the land can be sustained well and regeneratively. Like, it's a two-way system, yeah.
And it nourishes deeply. I know I was talking with Dan Palmer, not on the pod, but another conversation. And as we were talking, he said to me, if you came and were seeking some kind of design to be done, clearly what you would need more than anything else are multiple nooks within a space that would keep you warm with direct sunlight on you, because that would actually revolutionize your entire day, which then makes your year string together and work. And it was such a profound comment that I thought, wow, he's really understood quite quickly that if I don't have sun on my skin a number of times a day, I just don't function. I just, you know, it's such a critical thing to really deep dive into people's psyche and their way of being in the world.
Yeah. And Dan Palmer's work will live on forever. Like, there's no one like him to articulate those sometimes really complex concepts and distill them so beautifully. I think about him every day as a friend, and I think about him all the time in my work as well. I think he just lives on forever. Love him so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine, especially as you're designing spaces, you have his words and his guiding hands and ideas. You just flowing.
Transformative, I think, for Australian permaculture community and absolutely through the global community as well, just in challenging certain things in how we do permaculture design or practicing, and more generally permaculture in the community, very much in design, just absolutely challenged and elevated it as a consequence of his inquiring mind and his heart. So yeah, forever grateful for him. So generous.
It's interesting because I remember him saying, I think I was really wrestling with it for a long time, but actually what I've realized is that my role in the permaculture, evolution of permaculture, is to challenge it and to really question it and critically pull it apart. And there probably wasn't anybody else that I could imagine could have done it in a way that he did it, where it remained respectful, where people really, no one, you know, he was particularly close to the co-founder of permaculture. And so I feel like there's something all of us could learn from that, because of course there's these divisions in the way we communicate, and there are these fractures in the way our community comes together or doesn't come together. But you can actually bring challenge, and you can bring critical thought, and you can critique things in a way that ultimately results in a better outcome, but that doesn't actually dismantle people's identity or personal input to something that's bigger than them.
Yeah, no, it's a perfect example of how you can bring people along in challenging conversations, like not leave people behind or cut people out. So yeah, so much to learn.
But I think it's pretty key. I think as we continue to go into a global reality of discombobulation and sort of onward fracturing, it's a skill that most of us could learn. Speaking about talking with others, you, I imagine, have spent the vast majority of the last couple of years touring your book. And as you do that, you've no doubt been garnering the enthusiasm of communities around this sort of noble act of growing food, and had some amazing community conversations, I'm sure. What are some of those initiatives or conversations that you've seen or heard that build community as you've been around?
Look, I'm really fortunate to be invited to lots of communities regionally across Australia who are celebrating gardening and food production, and they're doing it through local councils or independently run projects with community fairs or community gardens, school gardens. So many different things, and I love that I can be in remote York Peninsula in regional South Australia, hanging out with 80-year-old, like, dead, hardened farmers, like, just of the earth, like, amazing crew, and then I can be in inner city Melbourne or Brisbane with some real trendy hipster crew, and it's all the same image in my head. It's like I don't see, like, all I see is the commonalities and the people. Are pumped, like they're just pumped for the earth, and they're pumped for the best type of grain or the best type of kale or lettuce, whatever they're growing. And I just, all I can see is people who engage in food production, and that's so varied. There's so many right ways of doing it, and there's so much care involved. I think sometimes in the broader conversation, sometimes we go, that's the right way, that's the wrong way. But I've never met a farmer who is out to hurt the earth, like ever, like ever. Farmers are just so passionate about the land they live on, the land they farm, and the plants or animals they're producing. Just so much care and intellect and heart goes into it. So all I see is incredible skill, amazingly diverse and broad skill sets being applied regionally and in urban spaces, and I see huge commonality. Like sometimes I rock up to regional areas, I'm like, oh, I'm not sure how this is going to go. I've got pink hair, I've got tattoos everywhere. I'm like, six
and you're super tall, so you really stand out.
I'm like, oh, I'm not sure how it's going to go. And then by like within half an hour, I'm best friends with all the CWA crew. Like we're just. I still think about them really often when I'm like, these guys are awesome. And it's a gorgeous reminder that humans want to connect, and food and land management more broadly is an incredibly interesting place to connect, because there's so much commonality there. It's a very neutral ground, I find, when you approach it with an open heart, open mind. Yeah.
When you're traveling, life feels a bit upside down.
Oh, yeah, it does.
It really does. And so I just finished having this conversation with Brenna about my external classes, and I went traveling, and I traveled for too long. I was too many early flights, too many late flights, too many kind of late evening dinners, and it all just completely unraveled. How are you going finding the balance?
Yeah, I don't think that balance thing exists. I've never found it.
It's elusive.
Very elusive, but somewhere else. But absolutely. Like I'm pretty good with scheduling my workload. Like, I am much better these days than I was a few years ago, where I just pack everything in like 12 months in advance and leaving no room for spontaneity or rest. I don't do that now. I am traveling more than ever, which is a new thing for me. Usually I'm very strict around that, but I've made a decision to experiment it with it in the name of seeing how much more impact I can have in terms of doing good work in around the country, to see if that pays off, if you like, in very grassroots ways. And so, the next 5 weeks I have actively signed up for what is completely a big travel and workload. And knowing that that's not sustainable, like, it could never do that. I'm not, like, we've got a friend called Costa, don't we? He just travels so much, but he gets energy from it. He loves it.
He does. He fully feeds on it. And I mean, he's truly an extrovert. He's also not got kiddos back at home that he's juggling. Sometimes, especially when you do have pink hair and you're 6 foot tall, can be mistaken for being an endless extrovert. And so none of us really. You just had a bit of consolidation.
I think I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, I can definitely love people, but absolutely love and need my quiet time. So usually across the year, I'll absolutely do lots of work on TV or in communities across Australia. But then I'll be home for like 8 weeks and weeks and weeks, and then doing my just home stuff, my Tasmanian-based work and a daily routine. I think I actually love a routine. I love going for my morning walk. I love knowing, I pick up my daughter today and we do this thing. And I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So this next 6 weeks is unusually busy for me, but then I'll rein it back in. I think you've got to chase the opportunities when they present themselves. And so totally. I think someone once said to me, honey, you've got to put yourself in the way of opportunity, because then you can deepen your impact. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. I love that, you know.
So, I'm going to get in the way of that opportunity. Yeah. watch me go.
Yeah.
And you do. You have such an intoxicating way about you that others then naturally decide that they're going to make change based on the interaction they've had with you or the guidance you've given them all. And that's just such a key driver for you to do the work that you're doing.
Yeah. And many years ago now, I used to do a lot of frontline activism, as you said, which is absolutely important. We need every type of activism. And I think each person is more suited to different types of activism, depending where they are in their life or their particular character. And when I actively made a choice to stop doing frontline activism and turn towards what I call a solution orientated activism, and use permaculture as my framework to do that through. And I got, in terms of engaging with people, having meaningful conversations, getting traction around work projects, I had around approximately 2,000% more success in making things happen and having
approximately 2,000.
Yeah, maybe more. I was like, oh, okay, I found my natural strength. This is how I communicate best. This is how I engage with people best. And so that's where you'll find me, in that solution-orientated space, which is 100% looking at the big challenges of the world. Like, I'm not vaguing out from the big problems. I'm not turning away. I am definitely not dropping out. I'm dropping in on a deeper level and going, This is my particular strength and skill, and it's going to see how much I can hone it and how deep I can go with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's such a hard thing for people to work out where that area of greatest impact sits. And I think it's probably worth saying that it might take 3 or 4 different iterations for you to work out what that looks like. And it might be that the first time you attempt something, it might not work either, or might not.
Sure. Like, it took me quite a few years to go, oh, I'm going to try this. Oh, I don't feel good. Oh, I'm going to try this. Oh, I got really burnt out. I'm going to try this. I got a bit depressed. You know, just keep trying. I think it's when we're living towards our values, we just kind of keep testing until we go, oh, yeah, this one's good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that can take a long time, but I say to people, don't underestimate that feeling inside you, because it's quite a strong way of guiding you towards a good direction for you. That's valid, it's important, and it's often very accurate.
I think that's that Japanese ikigai, you know, where you've got all of the what you love and what the world needs and what you're good at and what you can be paid for, and where the crossover in all of that is somewhere in the middle. And I think the Chinese Tao talks about something quite similar, and we were having a very early conversation a couple of weeks ago about the fact that when you do get into that spot, that opportunity truck that you're going to put yourself in front of, you just keep coming at you and at you and at you and at you, and you think, this doesn't feel hard at all. Suddenly it feels like it's all been unlocked, and there is just opportunity after opportunity being put in front of me, because this is actually where I'm meant to be, and the people that are coming to me are people that are also in their flow and in their state of ikigai, and that, you know, they've got the ability to connect with you, and they find you.
Yeah, your people will find you, find each other, like you work it out.
You definitely do. And so I'm going to sideline us to a different topic. You have just got goats back in your life. I'm stimulated purely by the fact that my three goats are doing backflips in front of me at the moment, and I'm here goat up tonight. And I know you just got yours back, but you could only do it because you're not doing it on your own anymore.
So I had goats for around 5.5 years. I milked them every morning and then feed them every night, so you had to be very around. And then as my work got busier and busier and busier, it was just insane. Like, I was literally running from job to job. I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? And so I made the hard call to rehome them to a friend's property in the country, and they're living their best life there to this day. And then, like, I think within 2 months, I was like, oh, I hate not having goats.
It's just not right. And you have a goat tattoo, don't you?
Oh, sure. My first goat, Gertie, down here. And so I just kind of started just, like, asking around, not in any – like, I thought it would take ages to organise. But I was like, look, the only way I can have goat skin is if I have a goat share between at least three households, so we can all travel if needed, or we can just have mornings off, slow mornings if you need them. And I surprisingly found two people very, very quickly in our same, like within 1 kilometre of each other, so we're very close. We all ride bikes and walk. Then I found these two beautiful goats who are very calm of temperament, very beautiful nature. And they were through an old friend, like, oh, I've got too many goats. You could come and have some of ours. Anyway, within 6 months we had goats again.
Wow.
And it's just wonderful. So I might milk 2 or 3 mornings a week. And that's, people are like, oh, don't you want more milk? Do you want more cheese? I'm like, I don't want to be self-sufficient. I don't want to make all the things. I just want to help have beautiful animals, cycle nutrients, and, you know, bring our food production closer to our body. And isn't that wonderful, you know? And bring love and joy to each other's lives.
yeah. How much is enough? Enough, that community, that self-sufficiency and community sufficiency thing. I feel like we might have talked about this in one of our other chats, but I feel like the ability to create, that makes it intentional but not overwhelmingly oppressive, is actually the happy medium. And so we don't actually have to be self-sufficient or even community sufficient, but we just need to make sure that we're doing things with intention and love.
I think that's so right. And often I say living towards your values or towards a thing rather than doing it, because it's highly likely we'll never get there.
And even when you do get there, you might only do it for 6 months, and then actually the rhythm for some reason changes and you drop the ball.
I'm super relaxed about it. Like, as long as I'm going that direction, I have good, like, I have good intention and I act with integrity, I'm like, I'm good. I'm fine.
Yeah. Don't make me become a puritanical pain in the neck.
Nah, not going to work.
Not going to work. And so you've got a second book. Tell us about your second book.
Oh, the second one's called Good Life Growing. So my first book was all about climate action, so how to live a good life in the face of a climate emergency. I had a smattering of gardening in there, but not a gardening book. And this book, this new one, is 100% how to grow fruit and veg in any climate in Australia. Mm-hmm. And so it's super practical and highlights, you know, our current climate, the changing climate as well, because what to expect with climate change, and how can we garden towards a good food system in that context. But it very much covers all the fundamentals: water, soil, compost, and then edible forest gardens, annuals, orchards, all the things. And it's got a very strong narrative woven throughout about why we grow food. Like, why bother, you know, when it could be easier just to go down to a local supermarket. So that's very much about that connection to earth and people and place, all those strong things, and how that actually the benefits are priceless. And, you know, it's just like when you plant a seed, carrot seeds, it's like, yeah, take that. Like, yeah, world.
Take
like,
that,
yeah.
Damn it. Watch
me
go.
The stuff is like, it's deep, like, good for you deep down, you know, as well as all the basic functional human stuff. The stuff is good for us.
I think words actually minimize how good it makes you feel.
I know. That's why I'm like, yeah, like I'm fist pumping. I'm like, yeah.
There is so much more to it. We were, we've got a school group coming through. We've got school groups coming through all the time at the moment, but one particular school group is here week on week to see a whole season, and they're working through the spring seed growing season. So they're harvesting last year's seeds, they're drying them out, and they're sowing them into seedling trays. And this little tacker said to me last week, isn't it just amazing that something that tiny is already pre-coded with an ability to grow something that will feed us?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just never ever, it's being marvelous.
Yeah, perfect.
Does it?
So good.
Yeah,
it's so magical.
It is so magical. And you can hold a whole year's worth of food in the palm of your hand.
I know. I think once people tap into that realization, like of seed saving in particular, and then, you know, germinating more seed, it's like, oh, I've got the power.
Yeah. And no one needs to tell me what I can or can't do.
Yeah.
And then I meet people that are doing something similar, and I discover I'm particularly crap at growing carrots. We swap.
Yeah.
I think some of the most amazing people we've got in our life now have been met because they grow food and so do we.
Oh, that's special. Yeah. Yeah. Again, you find each other, don't you? Your people, you just find each other. Mm-hmm. Lovely.
You totally do. And you kind of know when you see them in the supermarket aisle or in the, you know, the community farmers market, they've got dirty fingernails.
Yeah.
You might be one of me. You've got no nails and your hands have sort of got scuffs all over them.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
How do we identify people? How do you identify your people?
Oh, yeah. I haven't been looking at anyone's fingernails usually, but that's a good one. It's a great question, actually. Often we're drawn to each other. I think there's a strong vibe that we put out towards each other. And they're often super colourful people, not necessarily in how they present, but just in how they live their lives. Like, they're just very up for it, incredibly positive. They see the solutions, they see the opportunities, and so they're like the can-do kind of people. I'm like, yeah, you're my people. So I think it's, we find each other often through our work, but just often like just through community. Yeah, you've got that. They don't necessarily have to be permaculture people, obviously, but that's the spirit they bring to their life is absolutely golden. Yeah, I think
yeah.
We seek each other out through that energy.
Definitely an energetic thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember I was walking down the street in some overseas country years and years and years ago. There were three of us walking down the street and I had bright pink stripy leggings on that were absolutely disgusting. But this other traveller was walking in the opposite direction and he came straight to me and put his arms around me and I said, I don't know you. And he said, I know, but those legs. There was nothing about it that was slimy. He said it was just an energetic thing with those stripy legs. And I've thought about it often since then. You definitely know when you see clusters of people, which one or two within those clusters are the people that you can connect to.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's true.
quite intriguing, and it's definitely an energetic thing.
Mm.
And so life in front of the camera, tell us about that.
Oh, look, I'm feeling more comfortable with it. I'm working with ABC Gardening Australia. Like the first few times I'm like, okay, how do I do this? Do you know, teach me some skills? Like, how do I? I'm like, no, I just start talking. I'm like, okay, I'll just
start. Is the camera rolling?
So it's been very, it's been like a steep learning curve, I'd say, for sure. And so now that I'm doing it more regularly, I'm more comfortable. I go, okay, you just got to exaggerate things. You just got to go for it. It's not, because I have to do, the thing that helps me is it's not about me, it's about the content. And so however you can communicate that best is just, that's what you do. And so I'm really excited and grateful to be there, because just on the TV you have more reach, you have more access to people and communities. Travelling Australia, the Gardening Australia community is wonderful, so welcoming and generous, And I'm forever grateful just to be welcomed into those very varied and broad communities, whether that you're in country, Australia, or in the city.
Yeah, and multi-generational too.
Beautifully multi-generational. Everything from like little tuckers up to my knee all the way through to gorgeous old grannies and granddads. Yeah. I love that. And there's now the newer Gardening Australia Junior Kids show, which I'm on with Costa and Annie and Clarence. And that has just been a delight to see that whole other community opened up even more of the younger generation. So I love it. I love it. I think being on TV, like I'm kind of a small potato in TV land. So I'm, you know, so people are like, oh, how are you coping with the fame? I'm like, oh, mate, it's pretty casual. Like it's very casual. Yeah, so I think I'm super grateful to be there. I see TV as a great tool to reach more people. I'm like, oh, of course I want to be there. I grew up in a family where we didn't get to watch much TV, and in the 20s I was traveling, I didn't have a TV, and so I'm just catching up. I feel like I'm catching up madly. It's like, oh, okay, TV.
Whole of the world out there. Yeah. Right. This is mean.
Yeah. But stoked to be there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I remember when you got the gig and people were like, wow, but isn't she a permie? Don't permies not want to be into any of this stuff? I was like, man, ask her the question and let's see what she says. And that is exactly the answer I imagined you would give. And it's about connecting people.
Totally. I think it would be a shame not to utilise the tools and the opportunities in our very modern mainstream world to communicate really universal good stuff to people. What a shame it would be to not utilise that framework. What a shame if we only sat over here in our little minority corner and just talked to ourselves. What a shame. What a missed opportunity. So you will find me in any and every space that I can be in, because why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you take the opportunity to connect with more people, to have bigger, better conversations around how to live in the world?
What a beautiful, brave, open-hearted attitude.
Yeah, like, why wouldn't we try that? Like, why not? Like, what have we got to lose? Like, you know, we've got to try everything. But just go for it.
We do. The other thing that you are famed for is your commitment to hope.
Oh, yeah.
I would love just to check in on, I mean, your great big smile and your quick response to everything tells me that it's still completely intact. Any wobbles?
Look, I definitely have sadness in me about the world, about recent happenings globally, locally. Like that sadness has been there always. So I have down days, up days, and I have all that within me, as most of us do. I think I choose to actively come back to radical hope and active hope, because the alternative is just to crawl up into a crying mess in the corner or just become apathetic and drop out, like mentally drop out, if you like, disconnect.
Yeah.
And I don't see those as options. I'm like, oh, that's not an option. If we're going to really have a crack and really about caring for each other and for the world, you have to keep coming back to that space of radical hope, knowing that you're not always overly sparkly and happy, but you work towards doing everything you can to turn the ship around, knowing that it may not work, but it may work. And so I think I don't see any other option. And I think the main thing that I work on actively is just weaving that love and joy into my life, because my tendency over the past years is to be very earnest, very focused, very serious, and just focus on the facts and be very dogmatic about those things. But the world is grey. It's not black and white. It's very grey. And we have to kind of hold that tension and we find those moments of absolute joy amongst it all, because a good life, it can be quite hard, but we have to make time to go swimming in the ocean, play basketball, do all these random things, get tattoos of goats in your arm, whatever, dye your hair pink, who cares? Paint your house hot.
Your house pink.
Like, these things are completely unnecessary in inverted commas, but completely essential to just like holding the joy, finding the spark, feeding the love. You've got to keep going, you know.
It's really nurturing the psyche of our state of being, isn't it?
Totally, because as we know, like how you see the world or how you think about a particular situation can change so quickly, like just by your active choices. And it's not always easy, but we can change our brains to see the opportunity, see the hope, and go towards it. Like, absolutely.
Yeah. Yet I think accepting that actually it's okay to go back on your previous beliefs and your previous publicly made statements, it's actually okay to really know that you fucked up and you got it wrong and go, okay, sorry, backtracking, thought about it a bit more, changing my approach.
Yeah, and there's a thing called learning in public, which much more famous people than me, they go, oh, yeah, like I used to believe this thing and now I don't anymore because A, B and C, and I've learnt and I'm just, you know, and that transparency I think is quite powerful because often people are pigeonholed and they're cornered and go, you said this thing and often it wasn't okay, and then they have to re-educate themselves and have to do a thing, or, you know, there can be wildly different topics. But I think I hope my views change in the decades to come. I hope I have that understanding. I really hope I can go, yeah, you know what? What I used to think wasn't completely formed and now it's over here, and isn't that wonderful?
And maybe it's still not completely formed and it might still evolve it again. Watch this space. But right now I feel pretty strongly about this.
Yeah.
Actually, I noticed an approach that you took during the referendum. It was actually just a couple of days after Matt and Sadie put theirs out, and, oh, man, whew, I felt for them because it just, people were so inappropriately attacking. And then yours didn't cop any of that, but you had very, very cleverly structured your beliefs and it was not divisive in any way. You were very clear in saying that it hadn't been sponsored or coerced by any other organisation or government department. I just thought, wow, you very, very strongly put your beliefs up in front of everybody to think that through, but you've done that in such a way that just couldn't rattle and ruffle people's feathers. It was beautiful. No.
I get smashed. I get absolutely smashed online when I say anything political. So I did those around the referendum as well, the Australian referendum. I just think, you know, there's a certain responsibility that comes when you have a platform, and I respect people who choose not to or can't for various reasons speak up. I understand that. I have a bit of freedom with my work and my role, so the things I'm absolutely passionate about, I will not stay silent on, and I'm completely prepared. I don't like it, but I'm very prepared to take the flak because it's not about me, it's about the issue, and I keep coming back to that. It's not about you, Hannah.
Yeah, and it's interesting for someone who is got a profile that's building fast, your disposition is disarmingly open and honest and real. There's no ego in it. And you just said that it's not actually about you, it's actually about the issue. And I feel like it's your reason to be, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. I'm happiest when it's when I'm in the work, I'm just in there, and I can, because when it's not about, when you remember it's not about you, it's about the thing, you can go really hard in the best, healthiest way. You can speak to things really well. You can shine a light on things really well. And your face might be on a thing, but that's just like a little tool to get open a door. And I talked to my friend Costa about this bit. I'm like, hey, mate, how do you handle having your face and everything? Hannah, it's just another tool. It's just a tool. I'm like, it opens the door, and then all of a sudden you're talking to people that you may not have otherwise. And so I'm wide open about that. And I think it still requires me to be courageous and brave. I still have all the vulnerabilities and all the doubts. But I just remember things like, you know, are you going to regret not trying a thing? I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely going to regret if I don't have a crack at this. I'm like, well, just do it anyway then. Like, just have a crack.
And what's the worst thing that can happen?
Yeah, it's not actually that bad. Like, really, when you think about it, it's like, I've got my health, I've got my family, I've got the community. I'm good, you know. I'm good.
I've got a lot of seeds in my seed drawer.
Yeah, I do.
It's never going to be that bad. Yeah. You have to go and do a school run, but before you go and do that, I want to ask you this one question that I'm asking everybody in this series, because I'm just really interested to see the way people use language to distill really big emotions. So when you imagine yourself in the huddle and the community that you're surrounded by right now, who are wrapping themselves around you while your 5 weeks of chaos unfolds, and at home there's a patient in bed needing anointing.
Yeah.
What is the singular word that you think of that explains the way that makes you feel?
Oh, love. Just love, like in its big golden ball of universal, like, greatness. It's love and action. I just think, when I think about love, I don't think about this very romantic love. I think about people caring deeply for one another and showing that through action. And that means for me right now, it's helping with school drop-offs, it's cooking dinners, it's coming over to hang out and play board games with Anton in bed. What a love, 100%.
I think it's beautiful.
Well, if that wasn't all you needed to know about love, small potato fame and putting yourself in the way of opportunities, I don't know what more you could need. I can really resonate with her sadness about the heartbreaks happening across the world, but I'm hoping that we can all collectivize in our efforts and together we can choose to actively come back to a sense of radical hope. If you care for each other and the world we live in, there's simply no other option but to weave love and joy into life and weave hope into every single day. And with that as your mantra for the week, go gently, and we will see you next week with Maria, who wrote a beautiful book with her sister called Kindred. And as if we couldn't include that in this particular series, huddle series of Future Steady. See you in a week.